Welcome back to the Leadership and Management Book Talk. I'm Art Petty. I am here with Wally Bock, and today's show is all about books on thinking. It's great to see you, Walt. Great to have you here, since they can't see you.
Yes, they can't see me. And I think it's great, Art, that we're doing this.
I agree. I think this is a challenging time, and it's really good to keep the momentum, give people some options and some opportunities, some great ideas to read. So I'm really, you know, I'm thankful that you're here with us today, and I'm glad to be with you, Wally.
Well, and it's, you know, we're here in the time of coronavirus, and reading good books is something you can do even if you're quarantined. So I think we're doing a public service as well as having fun.
I like it. You know, I put a little note out on the blog yesterday about I'm kind of a little bit of a reset. A lot of the clients, a lot of the people that I've been talking to have, you know, understandably so, just kind of been uncentered. Maybe that's the word I can use, or the phrase uncentered. And I had suggested that there's a number of things we can do. One of those is certainly we can take a little bit of additional time to learn. And reading books is where it's at. So, and we're here to help that process along.
We're healthier. By God, we're going to do it. Yeah. I think so.
So, you know, I know I came up with this topic suggestion a few weeks ago, and you kind of looked at me, and then you thought about it. You came up with some really interesting books, but the topic was books on thinking. I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by it. I'm still trying to figure out how to think, so I guess it's understandable. You're much better at it than I am, so maybe that wasn't quite as intriguing.
Well, maybe you're better at the action part that they say is more important. It was interesting for me because when you first came up with it, my thought was, I don't have any books on thinking. And then I thought, well, I read Decisive a year or so ago, and it's a really good book. And so I went away from that session thinking, oh my God, how am I going to come up with something? I don't have books on thinking. And I looked at the stuff on my shelves, and I got out my iPad, and I looked at all the covers from the titles and stuff. And it was, what I discovered is that most of the books I have are about thinking, but about a special kind of thinking.
Okay.
Mapping Innovation is a lot about how innovation works.
Sure.
And strategy books are about how to think about strategy. And I think you've got a real strategic author coming up for us today. But once I got through the idea that I'm not reading books titled How to Think, I actually had a lot of stuff. And so it was a great exercise for me to look at the books I've got in a new way. And I appreciate that. So
I mean, you know, ironically or serendipitously, or just perhaps it was my nefarious plot, we got you to think about how to figure out how to
think. That's true. How to think.
You had to reframe the problem. You had to use a little bit of integrative thinking, which, by the way, hint, hint, will go to the topics of my books today.
Yeah, well, it was great fun, and I appreciate you forcing me to do it. Well, the doctor says my arm will be better soon.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that the speedy recovery on that. Well, why don't you lead us off and talk a little bit about Decisive? And, you know, I'm going to confess I haven't read it yet, which is making me...
Well, I recommend it. I actually recommend it to just about everybody. It's a book that if you have to make decisions, this is a good book. Mm-hmm. They start the book in an interesting way. They give you a scenario about someone who's thinking about firing her IT manager. Mm-hmm. And then they say, okay, what was going on in your head while you read that? And then they tell you, and by God, they're right. That's what was going on. The basic premise of the book is that we have very limited attention naturally. That's how we've evolved. And it's like, and their analogy is a spotlight. The spotlight is shining on something and it makes it clearer and so forth. But what's out of the spotlight is not as clear. Mm-hmm. And because of the spotlight, we are probably not as well equipped as we should be to decide anything but the most routine kind of things. And then they give you a process for dealing with that, which I think is superb. There's an analogy, which is WRAP. And WRAP, W-R-A-P, stands for widen your look at possibilities. I may have the words a little wrong here. Reality test your idea, attain some distance on the problem, and I love this one, prepare to be wrong. I've had plenty of practice being wrong, not so much preparing to be.
I mean, essence of design thinking, that's the essence of experimentation. I mean, I think that preparing to be wrong is a part of that process.
Well, I think what they mean by it, and this goes back to my engineering education, which is where design thinking comes from actually too, is there was a guy named Ron Dunster that I knew years ago. And I was starting my career. I talked to Ron, and Ron was a project manager for Bechtel. You know what they do. They take over countries, you know, turn them into airports and stuff like that. You know, turn jungles into deserts. It's what they do. And Ron, who had managed these huge projects, says, you know, you're going to sleep a whole lot better at night if you understand that most of what you decide to do isn't going to work. And that probably 90% of it won't work the first time. So that's what I see this is about. It's a good process. They have lots of detail. They had things I knew about, things I didn't. And they put it in context. And if you've read anything by the Heath brothers, Made to Stick or anything, you know that it's clear and usable, and you can't beat that.
So, and you know what? I guess I have a gap for the Heath brothers, so I'm going to have to fill that gap and read some. Are they research backed in their approaches?
Well, they're both faculty members, so you can kind of guess from that. They are the. I suggest they've got a bunch of books. The one that I suggest is Decisive because it has the most application to the most things that you do. And if you want to look at that, something else, Made to Stick is one of the best books on writing for people who aren't writers.
Sounds good. Sounds like a winner on both counts. And I like the idea. The reason I asked about the research backed is I'm kind of sensitive to the overabundance of content that we can run into that offers, I don't know, from the pop psychology to other things that kind of suggest a quick fix or are totally experiential based, but don't have any basis in the actual research and the studies behind it. I think maybe Bob Sutton is it Sutton who's writing about that? Is he the one? No, Pfeffer wrote Leadership BS.
Leadership BS was his, I'm trying to remember the book that Pfeffer and Sutton did together, but the Total Nonsense was the end of the title.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I'm kind of conditioned to what he and they have been saying, which is, hey, look, there's a lot of noise out there, and a lot of it, unless you can tie it back to research, it may just be
flawed. Well, and not just any research. I have a friend who is a researcher at the at Chapel Hill at North Carolina. And one of the things he notes is how many research projects he sees that are based on small samples, a survey of 200 or so. You know, and I grew up learning that if you're going to do a survey and you want it to be valid, you better get above 1,500 responses, and you better do something with how you structure your sample. And that's mostly gone.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's interesting? If you're familiar with Theodore Kinney writes it a lot for Strategy.
Oh, yeah, sure. Business.
He just published a fabulous article that said, hey, leaders or executives, beware of some of the research claims out there. So he's also out there kind of suggesting, and the people he's talking about, that there's a lot of bad research too. So, you know, you don't get caught.
Well, by the way, I read that article. I think it is a great article. I've sent it to a couple of people.
Yeah, agreed. I like it a lot. Okay, so we've got you down for Decisive. Are you ready for me?
I guess.
Well, that wasn't very, very motivational.
Exuberant. My God, Art, please tell me, God.
Tell us, what do you have?
I can't wait. What have you got?
Look, Walter, I know you've read neither of these books, and I have to tell you, I'm hoping to influence your reading list.
Yeah, it won't be the first time, Art. It won't be the first time.
Well, same. It goes two ways here. And, you know, serendipitously, these two books pair together so well. I couldn't have planned it better myself. So I've been a fan for a number of years of the book Creating Great Choices, A Leader's Guide to Integrative Thinking by Jennifer Reel and Roger L. Martin. Roger L. Martin is certainly well known. I think you're a fan of his as well.
Absolutely. If he's on the author part of the page, it's a good book. If he's on the article, it's a good article.
Yeah,
what can I say?
Pretty consistent. So, you know, I'm going to have to say, I love the idea of integrative thinking. I love the examples. This is his follow-on book, although he added Jennifer Reel as that co-author to a book a few years ago called The Opposable Mind. And The Opposable Mind was more about the theory of integrative thinking. This is about the practice of it. Their job in this book was to try to take this practice, and they reduced it to a multi-step process, make it usable by people with inside organizations as well. You know, I love the notion of we tend to make either or decisions, right? And there's a third way, their suggestion, which is, hey, create more choices. And what they like to do is take two opposing hypotheses about a problem and hold them in opposition to each other, and then find different ways or different approaches to it. So in the book, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me just jump in on that, because that's exactly one of the points in Decisive. That, I mean, it's one of their basic rules is either or choices are probably not good ones.
Yeah,
you need to expand the options.
Yes, well, that is literally the point of integrative thinking. And so they use a fabulous example, and I suppose I'm stealing a little thunder from their book, but I'll share it because I think it illustrates it. They talk about the Lego company, and a number of years ago, the folks at Lego wanted to find a way to create a movie. And so they actually created a movie that almost no one watched, and was, you know, relatively widely panned and went nowhere. So they came back at this again and said, hey, look, we really want to do something to create a movie. On the one hand, we can get the best talent out there in Hollywood, and we can get them to produce a great movie, but we have to give them full creative control, and that's a huge risk to our brand. Now, on the other hand, we can do what we did last time, which is take tight creative control, and we can protect the brand. But chances are we won't get the good talent, and we won't create a movie that's successful. So that either or decision there, right? And both have inherent risks to them. The CEO at the time, whose name I couldn't pronounce, but a famous gentleman, thought about it and used the concept of integrative thinking to come up with a different approach to say, hey, you know what? We want to create a hit movie. So let's make certain that we give creative control, but let's change the game. Let's introduce the creative people who are going to produce this movie to our best customers. Let's not have them listen to us about our product and our brand and how we have to protect it. Let's have them go to fan conventions. Let's let them find out what the passion is behind it, and then let's let them go with the movie. And so they ended up doing that, and of course the Lego movie became a major blockbuster, and there have been sequels and what have you. And so there was a wonderful classic example, and of course Martin and Reel go into much more depth into how that process unfolded. And that's just one of the many examples in there, but I like the idea, and I'm going to back up. You know, this area about thinking and why I wanted to do this, I work in so many situations with businesses and leaders where problem solving, big, wicked problems, are what it's all about. And we're stuck in patterns, and we need these different tools, these ways to think about things differently and find other solutions. And I think that's kind of what I really believe, particularly what's going on in the world now. We need some creative ways to solve some of the big problems out there. So I think this book Creating Great Choices does a nice job. It's not an easy read, though. That's the one knock I have on it. It's not, you got to work at it.
Okay, well, I don't know about that working part, but it sounds good. Yeah. You said it paired well with your other book. So why don't we do something a little different? Why don't you do your second book next?
I will. And I have to tell you, this one not only reads well, it's fast, it's fascinating, it gives you tools. Brand new, literally within the last day or so of us recording this. And the great news is I had a chance to interview the author a few days ago, so I'll be releasing a detailed interview with him on the Leadership Caffeine podcast. This is a book called What's Your Problem? To solve your toughest problems, change the problems you solve. And the gentleman's name, and I apologize, Thomas, Thomas Waddell Whittlesborg, and I believe I'm getting that mostly correct. So he gave me a few attempts at it and then said, that's fine, you're an American, go with it. So, you know, so this is a book that's ostensibly about taking a look at problems and framing them properly and then reframing them. So, you know, his thesis is, hey, we keep solving the wrong problems, and the way you frame a problem determines which solutions you come up with. So his issue is, I want you to think about reframing. And he opens up with a classic example, not his, he gives attribution elsewhere for it. But I'll challenge you to think about this here. So imagine you're a hotel property general manager, and you've received complaints about the speed of the elevators. What are your options at this point in time to solve that problem?
This is not fair because I know the problem.
Okay, all right. So Don, he's on to me. So all right, well, the typical answers would be, well, let's bring in somebody, the folks that own the elevators, and maybe we can speed up the elevators, but there's a limit to that. Or maybe we need to change the elevators out. So the example given in this case was, hey, what if we simply change people's perception of the amount of time they're waiting? Let's go ahead and put up mirrors in the hallways, and humans can do what humans love to do, which is look at themselves in the mirrors, and you know the wait won't seem quite as long. So, of course, right. Why do we see mirrors in elevator lobbies in hotels all over the place, right?
Because they're less than changing out the elevators.
Exactly, exactly. So what a classic creative way. And so there's an example of reframing. You know, I suspect you do it. I do it in my coaching work all of the time. I'm constantly trying to help people think differently, to change the frame of what they're looking at. And although I didn't have the benefit of Thomas's book, I think we kind of do it intuitively. What this book does, Wally, is it takes you from beginning to end through a process that you can involve your team in, whatever group you're working with, and you can begin to learn to apply the tools. It really is a practical how to do it book filled with examples. Everything about it reads fast. The summaries are great. Even the format is different. You know, you'll notice that the trim size is different on the book. This is just well thought out from beginning to end. And one of the things I just had to chuckle at, all of the drawings inside, all of the scribbles and doodles, Thomas did himself. And that was even one of the little examples there that he wanted to frame a bit differently what examples should look like in a book of sorts. So, okay, I've waxed poetic about it. I love the book. I absolutely love it.
I get that. And it's out actually 2 days, I think, before.
Yeah, exactly.
We're taping this. So you have no excuse, folks. You can click over to Amazon and grab that book.
Yeah, you know, and what I would recommend, I'd actually start with what's your problem. If you want to work with your team, your department, your group, whatever it happens to be, and strengthen the, creative problem-solving skills, start with what's your problem. Master Thomas's guidance on reframing, and then shift over to creating great choices and work on kind of developing that creative tension between two opposable hypotheses, introduce integrative thinking into the mix. And I think that you'll find over the course of some practice, get some reps with it, you're going to have a team of people that's thinking and acting a lot more creatively about the problems in front of them.
Well, it sure sounds like it'd be good. If we ever get back together from this virus thing, I bet it'll help a bunch of folks who don't meet on Zoom.
You can use the technique here on Zoom as well. Yeah, I hope you bought a lot of Zoom stock, by the way. By the way, we don't make stock recommendations on this podcast. Do so at your own risk.
Your attorney's been hard at work. Well, let me, I'm going to jump in then and talk about the second book that, that I have. What I'm seeing is a way that these things kind of connect. But Atomic Habits, which is my second choice, is a little bit different. I picked it because as I went through different books that I thought would work, Atomic Habits was the one that said, what's done a lot to change my thinking about this? Mm-hmm. And I've read books about habits all the way along. The author, James Clear, gives a lot of credit to other people who preceded him. Mm-hmm. But as I asked at the beginning of my formal review of this, if you go to Amazon and you ask for books on habits, you get 40,000 plus responses. So why do we need another book? Okay, two reasons. One is he uses the lessons from a lot of other people. It's solid. The second thing, though, is that this is a really well put together book. He's got a logical way for you to think about when do you need a habit? What kind of habit do you want to have? He says it should be four things. You need to make it obvious. You need to make it attractive. You need to make it easy, and you need to make it satisfying. And then he says, what if you want to break a habit? Well, you just go the other way. So you might make it just 10 or 15 seconds harder to do something you want to quit doing. Mm-hmm. Or it's good and practical. There are chapter summaries, which are superbly written. There are downloadable things to help you put it to work. My question in the beginning was, with 40,000 books on habits, why do we need another one? The answer is because this is probably the best one.
Wow.
And as you know, I don't say that lightly.
You don't say that lightly. No, not at all. If Wally Bock says that that's the best book in a category, this is a book worth checking out. I know that for sure. I like it. All right. Fabulous. Now, you had kind of a third one in there, as do I, by the way. A little bit of
sneaky.
A little bit of a surprise book. So let's talk about yours first.
Okay. Mine is an old standard. By the time this podcast airs, I will have reviewed it on my site. It is a business book classic. And a classic for me means it's been out more than 25 years and it's still got value. The book is Creativity in Business by Michael Ray and Rochelle Myers, and it's about the Creativity in Business class at the Stanford Business School. Mm-hmm. Now, what I need to tell you is they still have a class called Creativity in Business, and it's taught by somebody else, and she's got her own books and stuff. This is the Ray and Myers book.
Okay.
What I like about it is that it is creativity in business. Mm-hmm. I've read a lot about how you can be creative and then how you apply it in business. This talks about the whole kind of process. So some of the reframing things like that you were just mentioning are in this. A caution. If you are allergic to kind of hippy-dippy thinking, you may not like this book.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of stuff.
What exactly is hippy-dippy thinking?
Oh, you know, when you get the right vibrations and stuff. And it reflects, I think, the coming of age of the people who wrote it. So it's got some language in it that you may find uncomfortable or silly. I think the book is worth it. If not, there's other books on creativity you can get.
Okay, all right. Well, I think that's a cool recommendation. I'd never heard of it before. I'm fascinated that there's still a course on it. Is this maybe a forerunner of the design courses at Stanford that they're so well known for?
I don't think so. I think the design courses came out of a different direction.
Okay.
I think where this does connect to the whole Stanford herb, if you will, is that they were experimenting early with a lot of different ways to look at business. And both the Creativity in Business class, the class that our friend Ed Battista used to teach, the touchy-feely class, and so forth. The D school. All of that is stuff that nobody else was really doing. And that's, I think, how it connects. It's the environment. It was a good petri dish for that kind of stuff.
Sounds like a great recommendation. And I'm still processing on Hippy Dippy. So I have to tell you, I have never recovered exactly from a meeting that took place about 28 years ago where I was leading a sales team. And for this particular month, our numbers came in short. And the general manager, very creative individual, looked at me and said, "I'm mad at you, Art Son." Thompson, why are you mad? He goes, "Well, I talked to the inventory and it told me it was ready to be sold, yet you didn't sell it." I didn't know what to say then, and I don't know what to say now, but Tom,
I don't think there's anything with
talking to the inventory.
Well, you know, that's another lesson in cross-cultural communication that we should file for the
I don't know why that jumped to mind. Yeah, it jumped to mind with Hippy Dippy, so I thought I would share that slightly useless piece of trivia, but that's what came to mind. So here's my third one, and I covered it in another podcast, and it's The Six Thinking Hats by Edward de Bono.
Okay.
And that is a book that changes a group's way of thinking or looking at a situation, effectively harnesses what de Bono calls parallel thinking. You get everybody in a room looking at the same topic at the same time, and you maximize the power of the gray matter. That is, without a doubt, the best $12, $13, $14, whatever I believe you could spend in business to buy that book, read that book, couple of hours, and put the practices to work instantaneously. Whether or not you want to use the funny colored hats, you can use the process and the logic behind parallel thinking. So that's
what I think there's. Yeah, I totally endorse that. I like Edward de Bono, but I don't think his books generally are all that helpful. This is an exception to that. Mm-hmm. And it's an exception because it is, as you pointed out, for the group. And it gives a group a common language to talk about ideas and possibilities that it didn't have before. It's a little like some of the social style stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
The insight's important, but what's more important is it gives you a language to discuss things you couldn't really discuss easily before.
Yeah, good. Nicely said. And so, you know, de Bono, by the way, was, I think, the father of lateral thinking. I have to use lateral thinking every time I'm preparing to chat with you, Wally.
Does that mean you're moving from side to side and trying to get out of the way?
Exactly, yeah.
Probably not. Well, not to be outdone, I want to add something.
Okay, well, there you go. All right, you're gonna see me and raise me one, right?
I see you and raise. This is not a book, though. This is a blog or a website, depending on how you want to think of it. It's Farnham Street, mm-hmm. which is run by Shane Parrish, and it is about thinking. That's what can I say? Farnham Street, for those of you who are wondering, is the street where Warren Buffett's office is located.
Ah, okay.
And it's named for that because Shane adores, idolizes, and learns from Charlie Munger and the Sage of Omaha. So if you're looking around, follow the link to Farnham Street. You can get their Sunday update, and there's a paid version that's up above. So,
well, let's include
perfect fit for what we did today.
We'll include the link in the show notes for sure. So well, I have to, as a means of capping things off, I kind of coerced you into thinking about doing a podcast about books on thinking, and yes. You actually came back and did a masterful job on it. What's your perspective on this as kind of a category now for business professionals, books on thinking? What do you think?
I think it's more like my library and the way I think about it.
Okay.
I don't have books on thinking per se, but I have a lot of books that deal with thinking in particular situations. Mapping Innovation is one of sure. my favorite books. Years ago, I did a course on creativity and innovation, where I looked at that whole side of things, and Decisive and so forth take me in a different direction. When I took my degree, we learned structured decision-making methods. There's a classic book by a fellow named Moody out there on structured problem-solving techniques, or Van Gundy, I'm sorry. Moody's got another one of graphic stuff. it's all good. If it helps you do better, by God, think away, baby.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to call it a podcast. Wally, this was, as always, great fun. Thanks for being here.
Oh, great fun indeed. Thank you, Art.
See you on the next show.
Got it.